That was an incredibly good children's sermon, wasn't it? I don't think I even need to preach, but I'm going to anyway, just so I feel like I earned my paycheck this week. There was a time, I think, in our culture, there was a time in the United States when the values of the school and the community and the home and the television even seemed to all be pretty much the same. They seemed to at least teach the same kinds of values and philosophy of life. There was a time when it seemed like they were all throwing very similar, if not the same, puzzle pieces into the box. And so, as we went about our lives as Christians, there was almost a built-in reward in the society for espousing and living the Christian values. People valued honesty. They valued integrity. They valued faithfulness. But I don't really think that is so true anymore. Our culture and our Christian values seem to have gotten farther and farther and farther apart. No longer do we turn on the television and watch Leave It to Beaver, and the same kind of values that our parents were trying to teach us, we see on the TV show. Don't steal, be honest, go to school, get good grades, and it will all pay off in the end. We won't talk about the shows we see instead. No longer do we go to school and think that the teachers and the curriculum is going to teach exactly the same thing that we taught in the home. In fact, we can no longer assume that the home is teaching the same values as the church. You might be surprised to know that I have met several young people who have never been inside a church. I remember being at Pasadena, and we had been having some skateboarders come to youth, and I was helping out with youth as one of the associate pastors. And the skateboarders like to sneak over to skateboard along the sidewalk when the people in the office weren't there yet, and the evening stuff wasn't going on yet, and there was no one to chase them away. And I just happened to be walking through when one of these skateboarders was coming at me. Stepped out of the way, knew his name, talked to him for a minute. He said, he saw the building I was going into. Now, he'd been to youth a couple of times. He said, "What's in that building?" I said, "Well, that's the sanctuary." "Well, what's the sanctuary?" "You've never been in it? It's a church. It's where we worship." "Well, what do you mean? What do you do in there?" I was surprised, and I knew better than to be surprised. Even in our places of work, we can no longer assume that our bosses and our companies and our fellow employees are going to espouse the same values that we teach in the church and that we try to live out. There's no longer a built-in reward in our society for living a Christian life. There's no longer a built-in reward for being honest. There's no longer a built-in reward for being faithful, for having integrity. In fact, our heroes tend to be people like Donald Trump and Bill Gates and persons who have made a tremendous amount of wealth. There's a proverb 22:1, "A good name is more desirable than great riches." I think there was a time in our society when everybody would have agreed on that, do you? That a good name, that being an honest and reputable person of integrity, was to be more highly valued and highly treasured than millions and millions of dollars. Than even a roof over our head. I don't think that there's that kind of agreement today. I think if you ask people to line up and said, "Okay, door number one, a good name," you'll be considered a person of honesty, a person of integrity, a person of deep faithfulness, a person of God. Or door number two, great riches. Where would the longest line be? Where would we reward people for stepping in line? It has actually become somewhat difficult, and we're talking about some of this at Bible study, to live out our Christian faith in our society. It's difficult to take our Christianity to work. It's difficult to live it out in our friendships. We even get a little bit ragged sometimes for wasting our Sunday mornings coming to church when there are so many more wonderful things to do. But we are not the first people in history to encounter this challenge of how to live out our Christian life, how to live out the values, how to live out the love, how to live out the commitment to God in a world that doesn't value God or reward the values that espouses in us. In fact, the character we read about today, Daniel, and his three friends, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, were also experiencing that same kind of world. It hadn't always been that way. There was a time when Israel was its own nation, and it was a theocracy of sorts. They had a king, but their king was a king of God. Or was supposed to be. As you read through, sometimes they didn't do so well on that. There was a time when everyone was trying together to be God's people. It didn't matter if you were at the temple or at home in your village. Everyone was trying to serve God. They all kept the kosher law together. They all kept the Sabbath together. They all honored God together. Or at least gave lip service to these things. So that if you wanted to do it, they at least wouldn't stop you. But now, Israel is no longer a nation. Due to their giving lip service rather than real faithfulness to God, they have been conquered by a foreign ruler. Their temple has been destroyed. Their king has been killed. Their land has been taken. And they themselves have been captured and dragged off to a foreign land, to the land of Babylon. And there they sat down by the rivers of Babylon and wept when they remembered Zion. Their captors asked them to sing, but how could they sing a song to the Lord in a foreign land? Daniel may have well been asking himself, how was he going to continue to live out a life of faithfulness to God now that he was in a foreign land? In fact, now that he was one of the elite, one of the chosen people to receive special training, to be a part of the court of a foreign king. He was served incredible banquets of food and wine, given incredible education. And into the midst of this, Daniel had to figure out, just like you and I do, how he was going to live out his faith in that setting. Daniel did something, I think, that really set him up to succeed in this. He decided first that he would not defile himself. To put that in a more modern or accessible term, he first decided that his goal was going to be a person of God. That was going to be first and foremost. He chose the picture for his life. You know, this was going to be it. To be a person of God. He did not show up thinking, okay, first I'm going to succeed and then I'm going to be a person of God. or first I'm going to be liked, and then I'm going to succeed, and then I'm going to be a person of God. He didn't even seem to put anything after it. Well, I'll be a person of God, and then I'll be liked, and then I'll succeed. He chose his one and only goal. Cannot serve two masters. You've got to choose one. And Daniel chose whose his would be. And in so choosing, he chose his path. To be a man of good reputation in God's eyes was going to be of far greater value to him than to go through door number two of great riches. So the first thing he did was decide what his number one thing in life was going to be, who he was going to be, and what he was going to pursue. Then, when he showed up for school, because that's what he was at, the school, he knew who he was, and he knew what he was about, so he could begin to see which pieces belonged and which pieces didn't. And as he was choosing, he chooses a very interesting way, I think, for us to state who he is. It's about food. Now, in Christian life, we can eat anything we want, you know. We don't keep kosher. So it may seem a little strange to us that one way that was really important for him to be a man of God and to not defile himself was to not eat the food that was presented before him. It may help to know that the Jews had very, very strict dietary laws. We know that they didn't eat pork, but you need to also know that they didn't eat any meat that wasn't slaughtered just so, and with a rabbi present to make sure it had been slaughtered just so. They also didn't eat any meat within 2 hours of eating any dairy. And they didn't even eat dairy within 2 hours of eating any meat. You may also not know that you didn't even use the same plates for your meat dishes as you did for your dairy dishes. It would have been impossible to keep kosher in this foreign land if he ate the meat that was being served. And the way that it was being served on plates that he knows, who knows what they've been touching and who knows what they've been on. Now, this may seem really silly to us, but the whole kosher law, the whole understanding came from God and was given to the Jewish people as a way of reminding them in every breath they took and every bite of food they ate and every way they prepared it and lived that they were the people of God. I mean, think about it. If you kept kosher, you could not take a bite of food without thinking about God. You couldn't prepare a meal without thinking about God. It made God the very fabric of life. There was no separation of the sacred and the secular. It was all sacred. What we ate was sacred. How we ate it was sacred. And all of it reminded us and brought us into closer relationship with God. So it seems like a very small thing, a very small step. There he was in a foreign land that had no idea of this kind of concept of God or this kind of concept of sacredness. But Daniel had decided in advance that he was going to be a person of God, that he was not going to defile himself. And so he knew that this was not something he wanted to do. He was going to keep kosher. I think the next thing he does is very interesting. He doesn't stand up and make this big speech and say, you all are going to hell because you're eating this food and this shouldn't be here and nobody should be here. He doesn't even go to his superiors and say, I'm not doing this because this is wrong. What he does is he goes to his superior in humility and he asks. Did you notice that? He asks if he could not, he says, may I not defile myself by eating this food. He explains what he wants, why it's important to him, and asks to be able to be a part of this. His superior is scared, because if things don't go right by Daniel, it's his head. I think it's also interesting that Daniel respects that. He says, this is who I am, this is how I want to live. He doesn't put that man on the line for his sake. He says, I'm putting myself on the line here. Test us. I trust God. Give us 10 days to show you that this can work. Notice we've gone from I to us. I think the third thing that Daniel does that is just really amazing, that helps him live out his decision not to defile himself, to be a man of God, is he finds others who believe in God, who also want to live a godly life, to covenant with him, and to be in support of what he's doing. And the four of them do this together. How much easier it's going to be to sort out those puzzles if you have help, isn't it? You know, think about it. How much easier it is to sort out our lives and to figure out which pieces belong and which pieces don't, and how to go about living that godly life. If we have some other godly people in our lives to say, you know, what do you think? How did you work this out? What would you do? Oh man, if that's what I do, my boss is not going to like that. Could you stand with me? Could you be in prayer for me? Could you fast for me from lunch? Why go talk to my boss about this? Maybe even pray with me for 3 days. And then we'll meet this challenge together from having supported each other in faith. I think it makes an amazing difference when we have Christians to walk with. I think Daniel gives us a lot of help in seeing how we can go about singing God's song in a foreign land. For as we go to work and as we go to school, we are faced with opposition. We might say, you know, this is what I think is so interesting about Daniel, especially living in the town of Tallahassee where so many people work for the state. I mean, Daniel was a man of God right in his job where he was. It became his ministry to be a man of God and to live out his faith in exactly what he was doing. He did not leave the state school. He did take a state job and stayed in it for years, retired from it. He didn't become a missionary. He didn't become a pastor. He stayed doing the secular thing and made a huge impact doing it. You think about that? I think so often we compartmentalize our life in a struggle to face our foreign land that doesn't respect who we are. So this becomes the box that we put all the spiritual stuff in. You know, and this is the box that we put all the, you know, occupation job stuff in. And never the two get very close together. We go to our job to make money. They aren't Christian there. We can't do a thing about it. So we're just going to show up, do the best we can, come home, and then we'll serve God in the rest of our life. The important part of our life, we say. But I titled this sermon, Being Faithful in the Small Things, because I sometimes think what we do at work is the small stuff. It's the stuff that doesn't matter. It's the stuff that is unimportant. It just makes our money for us. Or it's just how things are. But it was in exactly that setting that Daniel stood up and said, this is going to be where I live out my faith. And did it. I'm going to be a man of God, not just at home, but at work. And he did it in an amazing way. You might say, but I work for the state. Daniel did too. You might say, but I go to a public school. Daniel did too. He went to the state school. You might say, but the people at my job won't respect it. The people at Daniel's job didn't respect it either. But they learned to respect him for the man of integrity that he was. He made this one small commitment at the front end. I'm going to serve God first. He made one small step in doing that as he faced decisions in his place of work. I'm not going to eat the king's ration because it's not in line. He made another small step of covenanting with other persons of like mind to help him stay faithful. Another small step. It wasn't big stuff. It wasn't radical stuff. None of this changed the world. But it did change Daniel. And it did change Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. And as we go on through our study of Daniel, I invite you to come to the Bible study because you'll get even more information there. And as we look at these scriptures on Sunday morning, we're going to find out just what kinds of groundwork being faithful in these teeny small things can make. Daniel found his way to sing the Lord's song in a foreign land. It is my hope that as we look at the life of Daniel and how he did that, that we can find ways to do that too. That not just our church life, but our whole life can become God. Every piece in the box can belong to Him.